level of Shabbos that even without the Yom Tov that we just walked out of, we still get Shabbos every week, Baruch Hashem, and hopefully we can feel a little bit better now.
Okay, thank you so much for coming. Welcome. It's a really special... you made it. Look at that. Wow. Really special schluss to give this year. Again, we did it before Yontif, but now to give it hopefully on a more consistent basis. So just to introduce what we're going to try to do here, B'siat D'shmaya B'li Neder, we're going to try to, again, learn Hilchos Shabbos. That's the delineated on the flyer. We know we're going to try to do that. The goal is not to give a practical, you know, the rabbi does once a year a three-part series for women, how to make sure your kitchen's not treif, or, you know, a three-part series on keeping Hilchos Shabbos. That's not the goal here. The goal here is that a lot of things we're going to learn, halacha lemaisa, practically, you probably already know, or at least you're probably familiar with, or at least you do by rote a lot of those things. But almost everything we're going to learn about, most of us haven't spent the time learning the background to those halachos. So what we're going to do tonight, and hopefully going forward, is we're going to start with the halacha lemaisa. We're going to start with the concepts about bishul b'shabbos, about heating up food, about things that seem like they're so elementary, things that we're supposed to be doing, or not doing, every single Shabbos. And we're going to try to just see what the background is, see where it comes from in the Gemara. If you look at the source sheet, you see some of it is printed for you. You don't have to have a source sheet, but we'll try to do some things inside, keep it text-based. I find that's helpful in terms of learning and understanding, and I think learning and understanding is extremely interconnected with doing. So it's important that we take the time to have that background. That being said, we're scheduled for a half hour every other week. We can't do in six sessions all of Hilchos Bishul B'Shabbos, never mind all of Hilchos Shabbos, in every other week for a half hour. That's impossible. If we want to do Bishul B'Shabbos well, by design, I would probably have 10 weeks in a row, an hour a week. That being said, I have a three-year contract, so hopefully this will, well, not with Yula girls, but hopefully this could last a little bit longer, and hopefully we'll be Siyat Shemaya. Right. B'Siyat D'Shmaya, we'll make our way through, but no one should lose patience. We're going to spend time every week. It's only a half hour. We're going to feel like we didn't necessarily cover all the halachos in Bishul tonight, but that's okay. You're going to look back in 6 weeks and say, oh, we had three full hours of Shiur, and we plumbed the depths a little more. Now I understand what the Shaila is when I have to ask the rabbi. Now I understand what the question is that's going to keep me from doing something wrong. You'll feel good on the back end, hopefully. I'll just note, from the Kol's perspective, that our learning this month, all of our Shiurim really, are sponsored by my nephew, Jacob Steinmetz. It still counts as fundraising for my contract, I think. I still get the dollars for that. And next month I'm sponsoring, so that counts also for my goals. So my nephew sponsored this month's of learning in the Kol'el, in honor of my grandfather, his great-grandfather, so that's very meaningful to me, both in terms of the donor and in terms of the honoree, so to speak, and we appreciate that donation, and the week is sponsored by Yoni and Lisa Wintner, and we appreciate their donation as well. So let's start from the beginning. Let's start from the very basics. We're here to talk about Bishul. We're here to talk about cooking on Shabbos. Now, I'm going to start with a disclaimer. Basically no one in this room is ever going to cook on Shabbos. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen that you cook on a Dil Raisa biblical level on Shabbos. There are so many levels, but from the cooking on a Dil Raisa level until what we actually make prohibited in the kitchen, that there are so many guards, there are so many rails stopping you, that unless you took out a raw piece of chicken and put it in an oven that was on Shabbos, which by the way, if a person uses the wrong type of oven, that might happen, but generally speaking, a person will not come to do cooking on Shabbos. That's not going to happen on Dil Raisa level. We are Orthodox Jews, so we're traditional Jews who think that the rabbinic law is binding also. There are a lot of rabbinic laws that a person can violate on Shabbos. There are a lot of derabbanans that can get in your way when you're trying to heat up food, when you're trying just to use a plata is very difficult to use a warming drawer. I try very hard now that I'm out of town to not say warming draw. Try very hard. But then my wife caught me saying, can I have a strawer for my drink? She's like, no, that's straw. That's straw. Like, I'm trying so... I'm a real New Yorker, but okay. So you want to use a warming draw. There's a lot of things that are going to be problematic there too. You have to figure out how to navigate the kitchen for sure and how to navigate the Shabbos table and the soup and everything that we're talking about. But all of those are basically going to be derabbanans. In terms of Bishul D'Oraisa, to really, really cook on Shabbos, do an Isser D'Oraisa, a biblical prohibition of cooking, you'd really have to take a raw piece of meat and put it into an oven and let it cook for a good while. What's the definition of cooking on a D'Oraisa level? That's really important for two reasons. First of all, we want to know who we're allowed to throw rocks at. if someone cooks on Shabbos, we can stone them. So that's good to know. Some people in certain places in Israel, they don't need that much to throw rocks. They'll throw rocks for less. Okay, we're more machmir. We wait to know they really cooked on Shabbos. So if we know someone cooked on Shabbos, we can throw rocks on them. That's one advantage. The other advantage to knowing if something is considered cooked in halacha, and this is important to realize, is because there's a very, very, very important fundamental rule when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, which is the following. When a food has already been cooked prior to Shabbos, there is no isser, there is no violation, there's nothing wrong officially with reheating that item on Shabbos. Which means that if halachically speaking, al pi halacha, this food is already cooked, I can now take it on Shabbos and re-cook it, so to speak. I can heat it up, even though if it had been raw, that would be considered cooking on Shabbos, which would be a horrible avera. But since it was already cooked from before Shabbos, I can reheat that. That's called ein bishel achar bishel. It's a term we've probably heard before, but we're going to try to understand exactly what that means. If you look in source number one, it starts in a Mishnah. It doesn't start with the rabbi's review course. It starts with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Maseches Shabbos on Daf Kuf Mem Hey, if you learn Maseches Shabbos, you'll find that really almost all of the halachos of bishel, of cooking on Shabbos, are found in the third parak Kira. Kira is a stove. So that's the halachos that involve cooking, heating, reheating on Shabbos, all those things are there. That being said, those are much earlier in the Masechta. This is Daf Kuf Mem Hey. This is almost the end of the Masechta. Shabbos is something like Kuf, like 157 Vlad or something like that. This is at the very end of Masechta Shabbos. This is a rogue Mishnah. The other Mishnah we're going to quote tonight happens to be is earlier in the Masechta, Daf Yod Tes. Also not in the general area of halachos of Bishul. If a person wanted to learn those halachos, they would look at the third parak of Masechta Shabbos. But here we're looking at the Mishnah, one Kuf Mem Hey. If you look in source number one, Mishnah. Kol Sheba B'cham Merav Shabbos. Anything which came into hot water from before Shabbos, meaning something which was cooked before Shabbos, a hot water, like a Kli Rishon, a very boiling, piping hot water that you stick a piece of meat into and it cooks. Anything that was cooked from before Shabbos, Shorin Oso B'cham in B'Shabbos. What can you do on Shabbos then? You could take that very same piece of food and what does it say? Soak it, shorin, soak it in hot water on Shabbos. What do you mean? You could soak food in hot water on Shabbos? Isn't that cooking? That's what I would do during the week to cook up this meat. I would put it into a pot of water. How come I'm allowed to do that on Shabbos? That's cooking. Says the Mishnah, no, it was already cooked. Look at Rashi in source number one, Kol Sheba B'chamin, meaning Kolomar Shiniz Bashel. This food has already been cooked from before Shabbos. What's the case? The case the Gemara tells us, I forget who the Amora was already, I forget, but maybe Rabbi Abba, I forget what his name was. One of the Amoraim, he was an elderly fellow, and he had weak teeth. So in order to eat chicken, he needed very, very soft chicken on Shabbos. Okay. So usually during the week, he would cook it really, really moist and really, really soft, and then he'd be able to chew the meat on Shabbos, during the week. But on Shabbos, he couldn't cook it right before. He couldn't make it so soft. So what was he going to do? So what he did is he cooked the chicken before Shabbos. Now it was already cooked. And what did he do on Shabbos? He dumped it into a pot of hot water. He reheated it so that it got soft and mushy and easier to chew. And that was permissible. Why was that permissible? Ein bishel achar bishel. There's nothing wrong with reheating that food after it's already been cooked. Yeah. Questions like that, we hope to get to. First of all, there's going to be a lot of times where I say I have to Google that food and get back to you. That's one example. Is that like tradition soup? Is that a similar thing? Okay. Right, so those things you're saying were already cooked from beforehand. And then you just drop it in hot water. Okay, so those are things we have to come back to because I first of all have to look into some of the details. Second of all, we're a little bit far away from getting to the practicalities. We have to build up from the background first. But it's a good question to hold on to, and you should remember to either I'll follow up with you or we'll come back to it in a shir. That's another thing I wanted to mention. The shir that we have here, it's not a huge group. We can divert. We can go on the different paths depending on what the questions are or what's bothering people. So first of all, if people hate Bishul, we could switch to another topic. If people hate me, too bad. If we want to talk about something within Bishul, we want to talk about, what are those things called?
Tradition soup.
What was the word you used? Romaine noodles? You have to check those for bugs, romaine noodles? So you want to use these tradition soup noodles. So yeah, we could have a whole shiur talking about that question. So next week we talk about that. You understand? We could try to, you know, cater it to the crowd. So feel free to chip in with those types of things, and we'll be neder mirtz Hashem with no guarantees come back to those things. So basically the halacha says in the Mishnah, this is just black and white, this is easy. If you cooked the food from before Shabbos, you are allowed to reheat it on Shabbos. Very simple. Not so simple. Why is it not so simple? Because what's the definition of cooking? Which is what we started with, right? What's the definition of cooking? Meaning, why do I need to know that? First of all, we said so I could throw rocks at someone. What's the other reason? If I know if something's cooked, what do I know I could do now on Shabbos? I could reheat it. So I have to know what cooking means. So what would you guess cooking means in halacha?
Changing the form.
Ooh, excellent. Changing the form. So it started as a raw piece of chicken. And now it's... So raw pieces of chicken are very soft. Are very... they're like rubbery. Now it's more... I don't know what the word is. Cooked chicken is more what?
Tender.
What?
Tender.
tender. Ooh, that's good, tender. It's more tender. Good, fine, that's one you can say. What else?
Edible,
excellent. This is exactly what we're looking for, exactly. Making it edible. So a raw piece of chicken, we're talking about quality, you know, midos, characteristics of the chicken. So it's softer, it's rubbery, it's tender. But now we have another option, which is not necessarily defining by objectively what it looks like, what it feels like, but actually, is it edible or is it not edible? Excellent, very good. So let's run with both of those things. Basically, there's a machlokes rishon about this. If you look in Maseches Shabbos and Daf Yud Tes, the Mishnah tells us that if a person wants to have food going into Shabbos on a fire, we're going to have to come back to this at a different point. This is a whole different discussion. But the Gemara says that food has to have already been cooked a certain amount from before Shabbos going into Shabbos. Why? Because we don't want to be concerned that if it's not cooked on Shabbos, you're going to go ahead and stoke the coals or turn up the dial to make it a little bit hotter and cook it a little bit faster. So if the food was already cooked some amount, right, we're not concerned that now you're going to turn the dial, you're going to try to cook it faster because it's already basically edible. What's that mean, basically edible? If a food has to be basically edible from before Shabbos in order to leave it on a flame, what's the definition of basically edible? So the Gemara says an interesting term. Anyone know the term? Yeah, you say machel, I say meichel. That's because I learned in yeshivas. Meichel ben drusai or machel ben drusai. Rav Schechter likes to say that the Rav used to accidentally say meichel ben dustai, because there was a character in the Gemara named Dustai, one of the Amoraim, like a holy person. Drusai was not a holy person, we'll say in a second, but he used to mispronounce it. But yeah, machel ben drusai, which means the food of ben drusai. Who's ben drusai? Rashi tells us he was a bandit. He was a listed mezuyan. He was a robber. And he was always on the run. He was always running around. So because he was always running around, he never had time to cook a full meal. He had to cook very quickly on the run. He was always hiding. So Rashi says he would only cook his food a third cooked. But a third cooked is not great. I mean, some types of meat people like to eat like that. But really, you know, a third cooked is not very edible. It's not geschmack, as they say in French. It's not very, very tasty, but it's minimally edible. It's close enough. I could eat a third cooked steak. Okay. The Rambam says half cooked, which is a little bit more like a higher standard for cooking. But either way, whether it's a third or a half, there's a certain minimal level of cooking that makes the food somewhat edible, as we said before. Now that it's somewhat edible, first of all, you could leave it on a flame going into Shabbos. We're going to come back to that. We're going to talk about blechs and covering knobs and not covering knobs and chilling pots. There's so many things to talk about. But besides for that, our halacha right here. The Mishnah told us, kol shebab b'cham in me'erev Shabbos, anything which was cooked from before Shabbos. What does it mean, cooked? So says the Rashba, you have it in source number 2a. The Rashba was one of the Rishonim, one of the medieval authorities that comments on the Gemara over here. The Rashba says, Perish, what does it mean, b'cham? What does it mean it was cooked before Shabbos? Nisbashel k'maychel ben drusai. It was cooked to that minimal level, that ability. If it was cooked to that minimal level of edibility, Michael ben Drusai, shuv ein bo v'shum b'shulei gayim, if you had a non-Jew put it on a fire now, it wouldn't be considered bishalakim because it's already cooked. And on Shabbos, shor no so'afil b'cham kli rishon, because why? Because it's already cooked. Ein bishalach or bishal. There's nothing to talk about. It's just reheating something that's already cooked. That won't be a problem whatsoever. That being said, the Rambam says something entirely different. If you look to the left side, and this is not a statement about their hashkafas left and right, just the way the geographics played out on the page over here, but the Rambam to the left of the Rashba, the Rambam says like this, how do you define bishul? How do you understand cooking on Shabbos? What's the halachic definition of cooking? Ha-mevashal al-or. Someone who cooks a food on a fire. Davar shahaya mevushal kol tzarcho. That's important. Something which was fully cooked. Mevushal kol tzarcho. Something which was fully cooked. She'eino tzarech bishul klal. It no longer needs any cooking, meaning you didn't cook your steak a third or a half. What'd you do? You cooked it, again, I don't know what the right amount is, but exactly the amount that makes it delicious and perfect the way you want it. If you would cook it anymore, it would ruin it. It would make it worse. If you've cooked it that much from before Shabbos, then reheating it on Shabbos is not going to be an iser of bishul. It's going to be permissible. Ein bishul achar bishul. Now, again, the Rashba said what? In order for something to be considered cooked from before Shabbos, that you can now reheat it on Shabbos, it has to be minimally edible. Says the Rambam, in order to cook something before Shabbos so that it's ein bishul achar bishul, there's no iser against cooking it on Shabbos, reheating it on Shabbos, what's the level that needs to be reached from before Shabbos? It has to be fully cooked. Now, those are different, right? That means the standard for the Rambam is a lot higher. If you have a food that's half cooked and you re-cook it on Shabbos, did you violate the iser d'oraisa of bishul? Yes. According to whom? Rambam. Whom is out of style, right? People don't say whom anymore. But you know that's grammatically correct. According to whom? I pronounce the B at the end, whomb. It's supposed to be a silent B, but you know that, right? You're a grammar person. To whom? So to whom? According to whom is that an iser d'oraisa? To heat up meat that was already a third cooked? According to the Rambam. Because the Rambam said the only way you can get out of the Isser of Bishul on Shabbos is what? If you fully cook that meat from before Shabbos. But if you go ahead and cook it halfway or a third of the way, and then you cook it on Shabbos, that's cooking. That's cooking on a Deraisa level. That's going to be a problem. The Rashi will say, what do you mean? Once it was a third cooked, once it was half cooked, whichever way we hold. So it's already cooked enough that it's somewhat edible. What are you doing on Shabbos? You're reheating it? That's not an Isser Deraisa of Bishul anymore. That's going to fall into the category of Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. What it sounds like they're arguing about is exactly what we had in Machlokas here in the front row before, which was, what's the definition of Bishul? Is the definition of Bishul making something edible? Or is the definition of Bishul making a qualitative change in the food? If it's about making a qualitative change in the food, then once you have a level that it's reached, that it's a qualitative change, there still might be more changes along the way that make it more edible. You could still be over on the Isra on Shabbos if you're cooking it more and more. But if the whole point of Bishul is that you make it edible, then once it's edible, if I cook it more on Shabbos, I cook it 100 times on Shabbos, I'm not making it more edible, it was already edible. And that's the discussion here between the Rashba and the Rambam, what the Isra of Bishul really is. I'll give you a nafkamina in a second, but yeah. In terms of what?
Subjectivity.
Excellent. Yeah. So that becomes a big question, mostly the case that you kind of just referenced, steak. So this becomes a huge issue because why? Because let's say you like a steak. I once had a whole chart of this. There's something called Blue Rare, which is disgusting, but apparently you have to be wealthy to buy it. I don't get that. It's like ripped jeans, no? Like you get less for your money. I don't get it. But there's Blue Rare, which literally means that you take the meat out of the freezer and you say, like, say hi to the stove. And then you put it on the table. That's blue meat. Tartare, what's that? That's like eating raw meat, right? Which I was told gives you diseases, but okay. So raw meat. So some people will eat that. Okay, but objectively speaking, let's say raw meat's not edible. But some people do like one of those juicy, red, you know, totally red pieces of meat. A really rare, a very, very rare piece of meat. Some people like that. So you don't like that. You're a regular person. You like medium rare. Medium rare is normal. Medium rare. The two-thirds are uncooked usually in medium rare, something like that. Yeah, probably something like that, right? Two-thirds. Okay, so you like medium rare. So you take out your medium rare steak on Shabbos. It happens to be you could eat steak cold, but you decide you want to warm it up on the plato. So what do? You take it out, you put it onto a stove, onto an oven or something like that, and you leave it there to heat up. What happens when you heat up meat? It darkens a little bit, right? Meaning it goes a little more. Now, taking it from medium rare to medium, is that cooking? So we have two things to approach over here. Was it already edible?
Yeah.
So is it cooking according to the Rashba?
No.
No, it was already edible. What's the difference, right? According to the Rambam, was it fully cooked?
No.
So if you take it to the next level, what is that? That's an issue. So that we understand. That was very good. Everyone understood that very well, which means I'm a really good teacher, by the way. Okay. But what Mrs. Luftglass is asking is that now for the Rambam, does it matter that Steinmetz likes his meat rare, but somebody else likes their meat a little bit more cooked? So who do we judge by? Does the meat objectively get more cooked, or is it based on subjectivity in terms of the person who wants to eat it? So that's a major question the poskim debate, and it's a big issue. Some of the poskim are definitely machmir on putting a not fully cooked piece of meat onto a blech on Shabbos because of this issue. Because if you add any amount of cooking, even if subjectively you don't like it, or if objectively other people do, meaning we're stuck in this in-between zone of my opinion versus just a standard of Bishul, it's a questionable zone. So we could talk about it more another time potentially, but the poskim, there are machmirim on that. There are people who are stringent about that because of the issue you're raising. It's possible that you just always have to be careful because there's always someone who would think that's considered adding to it.
So it's on the
side. According to that, yeah, that side, yeah. Yeah. The other thing that comes up, which is, yeah.
Is it only applied to heat? Like ceviche?
Oh, wait, those, sorry, what would you say? I thought you were going to say sous vide. Is that what
you... Raw fish that you cook with lemon. You're changing...
You made that up. You just made that. Calling your bluff. Calling your bluff right now. Made up a dish. It's real? All right. I owe you a bracha. So it's what? It's raw fish.
That you cook with lemon acid. Like it cures it.
Oh, you cook it with a lemon? The lemon cooks it? Wow. Sounds amazing. I mean, I don't know why in the world anyone would just use an oven and not a lemon, but...
It tastes much better. You're invited.
Maybe if you're like an environmentalist or something, you don't believe in ovens, but whatever. I'll think about it. I have no idea. Strange. Sounds unsafe, yeah.
Also, about like the heating things up in water,
yeah.
Like
sous vide, we have to come back to. Sous vide is a complicated thing. Correct. It's an interesting new way of cooking that didn't exist. Yeah.
So if it were according to...
Rosh Hashanah,
or whatever,
you could make a tradition soup, but if there are
according to Rosh Hashanah. Well, everyone's obsessed with tradition soup. What is this, Camp
Masora?
In Camp Masora in 1994, that's my years, everyone got chicken tradition soup for like their snack in the canteen, which was, we didn't even have hot water. We were just eating raw.
No, that's really
I'm saying like that was like, I was, the world has progressed. You could cook it with lemons at this point. What do you need tradition soup for? So that's a good question. We have to come back to that. Yeah, we have to talk about that. Don't do it this week. We'll talk about it another week. Okay, the other thing that comes up, which is also very interesting, which very much relates to your weird habit of eating raw noodles, is that, let's say you have the following case. There's something that's called davar hanachal kamosh yuchai, which means that there are some foods which are edible raw. Let me think of a good example. Carrots, okay? Carrots are edible raw. You could eat a ton of carrots. I had a friend in high school who ate so many carrots that their hand turned orange. You ever see that by anyone? Yeah, it could really happen. So you could have carrots raw all day long. Everyone enjoys that. It's a regular snack. What else can you do with carrots? You can cook them. I mean, gefilte fish usually has carrots that are cooked on top. It's a softer, it doesn't really taste like a carrot anymore, but it's a softer type of carrot. Fine. There's no joke you can cook a carrot. You know that, right? Okay. It's just funny.
I was thinking, like, for me, cooked carrot, there's no good gefilte. It's
name one of the places you put a beef stew. Roasted carrots. I think I belong in New York. I think I should never. You guys, I don't know. You guys eat crazy foods. Carrots. So let's say you're roasting carrots because you have some mishigas. You have roasting carrots. Fine. So that's cooking carrots. But did you make the carrot edible on Shabbos if you roasted that carrot on Shabbos? No, it was totally edible beforehand. But did you cook it kol tzarcho, like the Rambam says? Sure. You made it cooked. You made it cooked. Objectively, it's cooked. Subjectively, or you know, just in terms of the food itself, it's edible raw. So you didn't add edibility. But you certainly scientifically, chemically, you made it cooked. So according to the Rashba, you didn't violate the issue because you didn't make it more edible. It was already edible once it was raw. That carrot was edible the second you plucked it out of the ground. But the Rambam will tell you, what do you mean? You cooked it. You did a scientific change. You made a chemical process here that you cooked the carrot. It's softer. It's different. It looks different. So that's going to be an Isser of Bishul on Shabbos. Those are all very important ideas, again, for two reasons. One, when is it Bishul on Shabbos? Two, when have you accomplished Bishul from before Shabbos so that you can now reheat this thing on Shabbos? We need to know what the definition of Bishul is in order to know what we can then do on Shabbos if something's already considered Mevushal, either Kol Tzarcho or at least edible, to then reheat it on Shabbos. How do we paskin in terms of this machlokas? So if you look in source number 3, we say, the Shulchan Aruch says, Nor Chaim Shin Yun Ches Dalid, Vim lo nizbashel kol tzarko, v'afilu nizbashel kamaychel ben rusoi, shayich bo bishel. So we're machmir. Until you cook it fully from before Shabbos, something must be fully cooked from before Shabbos in order to then qualify for the heter, the leniency, the license of ein bishel achar bishel, which sounds like a negative, but it's positive, meaning that you're allowed to then reheat it on Shabbos because it was fully cooked from before Shabbos. But if it was minimally cooked, even if it reached Michael ben Jusai, even if it was a half cooked, a third cooked, which halachically has some significance, it's not significant enough to make it cooked in advance, and therefore you cannot reheat such a thing on Shabbos. So the first thing we need to know, halach lemaisa, and now I hope this is meaningful to you. Now we have some background. We actually saw some of the source and actually kind of fleshed it out together. This would be hard for you to get, but fleshed it out, no pun intended. You know, meat. It's not, whatever, it wasn't a perfect pun. But so we went through the process together and we had a meeting of the minds. No, just ditch the whole thing. I hear that. How do you stop this thing? So now that we've fleshed out, though, we understand a little bit better where this is all coming from. The definition of bishul is crucial, not only to throwing the rocks, not only to understanding the malachas on Shabbos. It's important for halacha lemaisa. When are you in violation of bishul on Shabbos? And more importantly, when are you allowed to cook on Shabbos, so to speak, in quotes, because the food is really already cooked and it's not considered halacha cooking. That's very, very important. And we'll have to talk about the halacha lemaisa practical cases as we go forward. But one important distinction to draw over here is the question, and you've dealt with this every week for however many weeks you've ever had anything to do with anything in the kitchen. No matter if you're cooking the meal, no matter if you're heating up, no matter if you're eating soup at lunch or supper, whenever you eat your soup, you've dealt with this question, liquids versus solids. Everyone's always wondering, liquids versus solid, putting it on a plata, not putting it on a plata, throwing things into it, liquids versus solids. What's the deal with liquids versus solids? So basically, it seems like there's a discussion in the Rishonim as to whether this rule of ein bishel achar bishel, meaning if something is already fully cooked and then you want to reheat it, it's mutter, it's permissible, there's no problem. Does that apply also to liquids or does that only apply to solids? Before we go into it, does anyone have a reason why one way or the other? Meaning, again, the rule is ein bishel achar bishel, which means once something is cooked, Reheating it is not cooking. It's already cooked. That makes sense to us, right? That's logical. It's not. You're not doing anything. You didn't add anything. Okay, fine. Should there be a difference if it's a solid food versus a liquid food? Does anyone think there should be?
Yeah.
Anyone want to suggest why there should be?
What's a liquid food?
A liquidy food, which isn't a word. If you type it into Microsoft Word, liquidy is not a word. You go your whole life not knowing that. What?
A liquid food from hot. Or change the
Changing the consistency of is a key word. Liquid can become very hot, which means it's relevant to have the iser of bishul by liquids. Let's say you cooked the liquid very hot from before Shabbos. Now it's cooled down, let's say. And you want to reheat it on Shabbos. Should that be ein bishul achar bishul? I already cooked it from before Shabbos.
No.
Why not? I don't know who said that, but...
Well, yeah, I still think it could change the consistency.
Meaning? To redo it? Good. It makes a difference. There's some sort of chemical change. So here's a discussion of the Rishonim. This is brilliant, and it's based on what we just spoke about. Some of the Rishonim, the Rush quotes a Rashi, who distinguishes between the davar lach, lamed ches, lach, lamed ches, two-letter word, means moist, or liquidy, or I don't have another word for it, so I shouldn't have said or, and yavesh. Yavesh means a dry food, something which doesn't have liquid associated with it. So if you have a davar lach, something liquidy, versus if you have something that's davar yavesh, a dry food, says Rashi, there is a difference. If it's a dry food, a chicken, a meat, something that doesn't have any sauce or anything like that, that has the rule of ein bishul achar bishul, which means that if it was cooked from before Shabbos, I can reheat it on Shabbos, and I have no guilty conscience at all. What about a liquidy food? What about water? What about a sauce or something that's saucy? We'll get to. So is that going to have the same license that you're allowed to reheat that on Shabbos? The answer, says Rashi, is no, it doesn't have the same license. Why? Similar, I think, basically what you just said, which is as follows. When I cook a piece of meat, a piece of chicken, so it's cooked from before Shabbos, cold tzarko, it's fully cooked, okay? When I reheat it on Shabbos, have I made any change now to the chicken? None. Temperature, but no change physically to the chicken. Let's say I cooked up water until it was boiling on Erev Shabbos. Then I let it sit and it cooled down, and on Shabbos morning I wake up and say, I want to reheat that water. Any change? Yeah, I'm reheating. The water lost all of its properties that it got from being heated the first time. So when I reheat a liquid, what am I doing? I'm doing it all over again. Now, you could make differences. There are sauces where, you know, every time you reheat it, you're adding to the process. Or there are sauces where once it's already cooked, you're not adding anything cooked, a liquidy food, somewhere in between water and the sauce, you could figure there are differences. But if we talk across the board as liquids, as one general rule, which is what the post can basically do, they lump them all together. So you realize that once you cook a liquid, it's true, it reaches a level of cooked and boiled, and that is halachically important, that's very significant, but the second you let it cool down, let's say all the way down for now, let's see it cool down all the way, the second you let it cool down, what happens? It reverts to its original state, and when you cook it back up again, what are you doing? Bishul, you're cooking. So says the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Rashi, based on the Rashi who quotes the Rashi, that according to these Rishonim, if you have a liquid or a liquidy item, and you cooked it from before Shabbos, but then it cooled down and you reheated it, that would be an issue of Bishul on Shabbos. What's the difference is by something that's solid food, it's already been cooked, you're not really adding anything by reheating it. Now, that is a machlokas. It's not clear whether we hold that way. The Shulchan Aruch is machmer. The Shulchan Aruch is stringent. Svardim have to be careful about this, meaning if they have a liquid food that was cooked before Shabbos, if they reheat it on Shabbos, they have to worry that it's probably an Isser Daraisa. It says biblical prohibition, a biblical violation of cooking on Shabbos to reheat that liquid. The Ramah for Ashkenazim will stop here, even though it feels like we didn't get to, you know, where we would have wanted to get to, but that's okay. We'll go through the pieces, building blocks. The Ramah says differently. The Ramah says we're only going to be machmir. He doesn't think it's an Isser Daraisa, seemingly. He thinks it's a chumrah. There's a chumrah, there's a stringency. We're only going to be machmir if you cooked a liquid from before Shabbos and it cooled down. He says nitzdanein legamrei, meaning it cooled down completely. I think it's on your sheet, although I'm not sure about that. Yeah, number 6, right? If the liquidy food was cooked before Shabbos and then it cooled down legamrei, totally, totally cool, totally cold, then says the Ramah, not Aser Daraisa, we're going to throw rocks. What does the Ramah say? Nagu lahakol bezeh imlo nitzdanein legamrei. We're basically lenient unless it cooled down all the way. If it cooled down all the way, we're not going to be lenient. The Ramah doesn't necessarily sound like this is really an Iser Daraisa, bona fide, a violation of Hilchos Shabbos. It's a chumrah. It's not the right thing to do. We're not allowed to. We have to follow the Ramah. We're Ashkenazim. We have to follow the Ramah. Most of the time, by the way, the Ramah gives us chumras. So you should be happy the Ramah gave us a kula over here, just to be clear. Svardim usually get a lot more kulas from the Shulchan Aruch. We get a lot more of the chumras. But here, the Ramah is sort of giving us a kula. He's saying the idea that it's only a chumra and not that it's an Isser Daraisa once it's cooled down all the way. Who cares if it's a chumra or an Isser Daraisa? You're not allowed to do it, no? If you had hot water and it cooled down, you can't reheat it. So what's the difference? I'll give you a case. This is a very interesting case. We'll end with this. I think I said we'll end with this 3 times already, right? Good. But this time maybe we will. Maybe. Bli Nether. I don't want to wait for next year for Hataras and Dharma Nula. Okay. So let's say the following case. You make yourself a cup of tea. Hot water from the urn. However you make your tea, that's its own sheer. And you drink your tea. Oh, okay. Very good. Delicious tea. Fine. Then you say, I want a second cup. I want a second cup of tea. So you take that same cup and you bring it over to the urn. And what do you notice? On the inside, still a little wet, right? There are still some drops of liquid. Now, those drops of liquid are hot? No, it's been 20 minutes. It's freezing cold, those drops of liquid. So what's going to happen when I pour water now out onto those drops of liquid? It's going to heat the water that's in your cup. Now, we just learned that if liquid was cooked from before Shabbos, on Shabbos, doesn't matter, and then it cooled all the way down, are you allowed to recook it? Absolutely not. Now you're cooking water. So what's the halacha in that case? Are you allowed to do that? Get a new cup. You're saying you can't do it. Or dry out the cup. Or just pour lemons in and that'll cook the water itself. It's easier, much easier that way. Maybe. Let's just talk in a Kli Rishon though. Let's talk in a Kli Rishon. Maybe. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, and I believe the Chazon Ish has a similar point, we're makel on this. Or Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes about this as well. They're makel on this. Why? Because the whole thing is really just a chumrah, according to Ashkenazim. For Svardim, maybe it's true. The Shulchan Aruch says, once it cools down, that's bishul daraisa. To heat up that water now, that's cooking on Shabbos on a biblical level. You got to avoid that. But for Ashkenazim, even though the water cooled down the gamma, I really reassume that once the water was cooked, something chemical happened, that the water was cooked water. It's true, by the way. The Igle Tal, we'll talk about him another time, the Sacha Sheva Rebbe, he has a whole sefer in Hilchos Shabbos. So he writes that he heard from a chemist that he wasn't a Hawaii Rosh Yeshiva, unbelievable, but he heard from a chemist that the chemist said that if you heat up water, there is a chemical change in the water. Anyone here take science? There is, right? Doesn't water become sterile when you cook it? Isn't that a thing? Like if there are any germs in there, it becomes sterile? So maybe it reverts, I don't know, that's a science question, but there is something accomplished when you heat up water to the point of boiling. Something is accomplished. Again, steam you mentioned before, evaporation, right? That does happen. Something chemical does happen in the process. So we know something happened. So when you reheat it, it's not really changing it. It's really just bringing it back to its old state, but it was never really changed because you changed it when you boiled it the first time, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and again, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, I think the Chazon Ish as well, when I pour this hot water into the cup that has a few droplets, so minimal. It's such a grumma, it's so indirect. And it's not even Nisr Daraisa, the whole thing is only a chumra, not even Nisr Darabanan. So it's a psik reisha de lo nichle. I don't want this to happen. It's going to happen automatically, but I don't want it to happen. It's a tiny amount. And it's something that is happening indirectly. And the whole thing's a chumra in the first place, so the postkum are pretty makel on that to question. That's halacha l'maisa, that comes up every week. You have to use a new cup, you have to waste a napkin. So according to those postkum, no, you can be makel. Now, it is easy to dry out the cup and satisfy the Shulchan Aruch and get extra points with a Kaddish Baruch Hu, which is always a good suggestion. But strictly speaking, or leniently speaking, these poskim say that is permissible because the whole thing is only a chumra in the first place, and it's so indirect and so convoluted that you're cooking a few drops of water that were left over in your cup that maybe we could be makel on such a thing. Okay, we have a lot to come back to, B'li Neder Mir Teshem, but this is the building blocks. This is the beginning of understanding, putting things back on the plata, you know, reheating things on Shabbos. Now we have the basics, so B'siyat Shemaya, next time we'll be able to talk a little bit more practically about how it applies. Thank you all for joining.